There are two keys to rapid, continuous, lifelong learning. The first key is very simple. It is to recognize that your work, whatever it is, has certain key result areas, or what we called critical success factors, that determine your success or failure in your field. A critical success factor is something that you must absolutely positively do well if you want to succeed in that area. And there are seldom more than 5 to 7 critical success factors in every area of endeavor. For example, if you were in sales, the critical success factors would be prospecting, establishing rapport, identifying the problem, presenting the solution, answering objections, getting the order, and then following up and getting referrals. If you become absolutely excellent in each of those 7 areas, you will soon be one of the top people in your field. By seeing yourself as a do-it-to-yourself project, and by developing a learning plan for each of these skill areas in whatever field you're in, you can increase your ability in each area by 10% or more per year. If you become 10% better in each of your critical success factor areas, the cumulative result will be that you will double your total productivity and output every 12 months. It's amazing, but true. To use this method, sit down and define your critical success factors for your field. Then, make out a learning plan to become incrementally better in each one over the course of the following year. Design this plan so that you are working on it every day and every week. The cumulative effects of this gradual, continuous improvement will be quite extraordinary. The second key to continuous learning has to do with the continuous improvement of the Kaizen method. It is based on the fact that you only have to become a little tiny bit better each day for this to accumulate into an extraordinary difference over the course of a year or more. For example, if you were to commit yourself to becoming 0.5% better in your productivity, performance, and output over the next 7 days, this would translate into a 2% overall improvement in your output over the course of the next 4 weeks. If you were to continue to become 0.5% better per week, which isn't very much, and which you can do following the steps I will explain in a moment, you will become 26% better over the course of a 52-week year. If you continued this process year after year, by the miracle of compounding, you would be twice as productive in 3 years and 10 times as productive as you are today in 10 years. This method of incremental improvement is based on 3 simple steps. I've taught this method and variations on it for years, and thousands of my students have come back to me or written and told me that it works exactly as I say it does. Remember, to earn more, you must learn more. You are maxed out today at your current level of knowledge and skill. If you want to increase your income in the future, you have to add to your knowledge and skill. You have to increase your ability to get practical results for which people will pay you. And it is easier today to get the knowledge and skill you need than it has ever been before. First, resolve to read 30 to 60 minutes each day in your chosen field. The best time to do this is first thing in the morning. Read something educational, motivational, or inspirational during what is called the golden hour after awakening. As Earl Nightingale said many years ago, 1 hour of study per day will make you an expert in 3 years, a national authority in 5 years, and an international authority in 7. It takes a while for you to begin to move ahead of the pack, but 1 hour per day will eventually make you one of the most successful people in our society. 1 hour of reading per day will translate into approximately 1 book per week. 1 book per week will translate into about 50 books per year. This is the same number of books that you would need to read and synthesize to earn a PhD from a leading university. 50 books per year will translate into about 500 books over the next 10 years. At the very least, you'll need a bigger house just to hold your books. Reading is to the mind as exercise is to the body. It is virtually impossible for you to learn and develop toward the fulfilling of your potential unless you become a lifelong reader. Last year, 80% of American families did not buy or read a single book. 70% of adult Americans have not entered a bookstore in the last 5 years. Probably 80 to 90% of all the personal and professional self-help books are read by 10% or 20% of the population. The average self-made millionaire reads approximately 19 books per year, of which 12 are nonfiction, or a rate of 1 nonfiction book per month. If you just do this, you'll begin to move upward and onward very rapidly. Second, turn your car into a university on wheels. Always be listening to educational audio when you're moving around. In a matter of a year or two, you can become one of the best educated people in America by just listening during what would normally be downtime or transition time. I've met thousands of men and women who have totally changed their lives in every way through the simple expedient of audio listening. Third, create a personal development and education plan and then attend every seminar and course you can. By the time a seminar reaches the public arena, or by the time a course is offered in a community college or Department of Continuing Education, it has been thoroughly vetted by an enormous number of people. When you take a seminar or training program, you get the benefit of hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of study and experience invested by the teacher, all condensed into a usable form. Finally, surrounding everything, make a commitment to yourself to engage in lifelong learning. Peter Drucker recently wrote that continuous learning is the only way to cope with rapid change. John Nesbitt wrote that continuous learning is the most important skill that a person can develop in today's modern world. Peter Senge wrote that continuous learning may be the only source of sustainable competitive advantage for individuals and corporations in the future. When you become a continuous learner and you learn and practice something new every day, you'll be taking full control of your personal and financial destiny. You'll be putting yourself onto the fast track in your own life. You'll be assuring that you realize the incredible potential that you have. Jumping out of an airplane for the first time is quite exhilarating. You get an amazing rush of terror and joy simultaneously. Your heart rate speeds up dramatically, and your senses become more acute than ever before in your life. You are suspended momentarily between life and death, with the wind rushing through your ears and your body plummeting toward Earth at an incredible speed. It's something you never forget. The world of work today is often very similar to jumping out of an airplane for the first time. It is scary, exhilarating, unpredictable, filled with challenge, excitement, terror, joy, and possibility. Just like every other part of our fast-moving society, the world of work is changing at a more rapid rate than ever before. In one lifetime, we have moved from the industrial age of the 30s and 40s to the service age of the 50s and 60s to the information age of the 70s and 80s and into the communications age of the 90s and beyond. Fully 80% of our population today is engaged in what has come to be called knowledge work, or work of the mind, that no longer requires the making or moving of physical objects. The shifts that normally would have taken generations have taken only a few years. Fully 90% of all the thinkers, inventors, creators, entrepreneurs, business experts, salespeople, scientists, and technicians who have ever lived are living and working today and producing ever greater quantities of goods and services that require more and more mental power to operate and take advantage of them. The great majority of working people today are overwhelmed and even baffled by the rapid rate of change, and as I've said continually, this rate of change is going to continue accelerating for the rest of your life. When I was growing up in the 60s, I was told that each person had three phases of life. The first phase was the first 20 years, which consisted of your learning years, more or less. If you went to university and got a couple of extra years, that was merely an extension of your learning years. After that, for the next 40 or 45 years, came your earning years. This is where you went out, got a job with a large company, put your nose to the grindstone, and worked away for the rest of your life until you reached the final phase from 60 or 65 onward, called your yearning years. During these final years, you retired and enjoyed the savings and pension funds that you had accumulated during your working lifetime. As recently as the 50s, we were brought up believing that the normal course of events was to go out and go to work for a large company and to stay there for the rest of your life. People who changed jobs were seen as undependable and unreliable. Losing a job, especially being fired, was considered to be a major setback in a person's life. Today, the average person starting work at the age of 21 can expect to have at least 14 full-time jobs or assignments lasting 2 years or more each, as well as a series of shorter jobs, plus five or more completely different careers over the course of his or her working lifetime. This is absolutely unprecedented in all of human history. Imagine you will be working in an average of five totally different industries, engaged in five totally different careers over the course of your working lifetime if you're starting off today. I meet hundreds and even thousands of people at my seminars who have made total life changes already, and sometimes several times, moving from one industry to another, or from one part of the country to another, or from one whole area of occupation to doing something completely different. This is often called the de-jobbing of the workplace. Not only are jobs and job requirements changing at a blinding speed, but jobs are disappearing more rapidly than ever before, and once gone, they're never coming back. The Fortune 500 companies have laid off several million people in the last decade, and most of them are producing more goods and services and making higher profits than ever before. U.S. Steel, for example, from 1980 to 1990, reduced its workforce from 120,000 people to 30,000 people, increased its output by 37%, and nearly tripled its profits. The people that U.S. Steel laid off are never going to be hired again to work in the steel industry. Those jobs are gone forever. And this is happening in industry after industry, especially in larger industries throughout the United States and the whole industrialized world. This change in the world of your work and career necessitates that you make fundamental shifts in the way you look at yourself and your potentials for the future. Those who make these shifts the earliest will be the men and women who lead the field in the years and decades ahead. The first shift you must make in the world of today and tomorrow is from the idea of lifelong employment to the idea of lifelong employability. This is the major change that has taken place in the job contract that used to exist between employers and employees in established companies everywhere. It used to be that employers would try to attract people and then create a package of benefits and opportunities such that they would stay with the company for their entire careers. Many people looked forward to getting out of school and joining a large company like IBM or General Motors and settling in for the rest of their working lives. Today, however, employers can only offer lifelong employability. They say, "We cannot guarantee your job will last forever, but we can offer you every opportunity to gain and maintain a high level of skills so that if anything happens to your job here, you'll be able to move at approximately the same level to another organization." This is the new reality in the world of work. What is your most valuable asset? As we've said before, many people think of their house, their car, their bank account, or their investments. But the answer to this question is that your most valuable asset is your earning ability. It is your ability to earn a living. This is the most valuable thing that you own in terms of cash flow. It's also your most expensive investment. It has taken you your entire life, including virtually everything that you have learned up until now, to build this earning ability of yours, and you must therefore be very conscious and deliberate about maintaining and increasing its value over time. Your earning ability is quite simply your ability to apply your mental, emotional, and physical energies to the accomplishment of a task or result for which someone else will pay you. It's your ability to make a valuable contribution to the lives and work of the people around you, your customers and the customers of your company. Your earning ability enables you to enjoy one of the highest standards of living in the world. If something were to happen to your job or industry, and your earning ability remained intact, you could walk across the street or move across the nation and begin applying your earning ability like a laser beam or a powerful tool to the world of work and start generating tens of thousands of dollars per year into your life. This earning ability of yours is so precious and important that it can ultimately enable you to solve all of your problems and achieve all your goals. A major shift, therefore, that you must make is from improving your position in your current company to increasing your earning ability in your current work life. And whatever skills, abilities, talent, experience, knowledge, and education you have that add up to your current earning ability today, the one thing you know for sure is that they are all becoming obsolescent at a more rapid rate than ever before. Whatever field you are in has a certain rate of obsolescence of talent and skill. Sometimes your talent, skill, knowledge will become obsolescent over the course of a few years, sometimes over a couple of years. If you work in the stock market on Wall Street, for example, your knowledge of various stock and bond prices and their underlying values may become obsolescent in a few weeks or even in a few days, as after the stock market crash of 1987. Whatever field you are in, you are losing a part of your knowledge and skill every single day. Your job is to focus on continually maintaining and increasing your earning ability and expanding your employability. You must constantly be increasing your value, your ability to make a worthwhile contribution for which others will pay, and increasing your skill levels so that you remain continually employable in a fast-changing job market. Here's a good question for you, as we've said before. What is your next career going to be? What entire new area of endeavor or activity are you going to be working in the next 3 to 5 years? In terms of re-eventing, re-evaluating, and refocusing, what whole new area of work and life will you be making a living in 5 years from now? Remember, the very best way to predict the future is to create it. And those who do not plan for the future cannot have one. Wayne Gretzky is famous for responding to a reporter's question about his success in hockey. He said, "Most players go to where the puck is. I go to where the puck is going to be." Your goal is also to go to where the puck is going to be in your life and career. It's absolutely essential that you think in terms of your next career, whether or not you actually intend to have one. Most people become so comfortable and complacent doing what they're doing that they think it will go on forever. The unemployment lines are filled with people who felt that they could continue in their current jobs with little or no concern for the avalanche of change taking place in the job market and that it wouldn't make any difference to them. But as you know, everything counts. Everything that you do either helps you or hurts you. Everything adds up or takes away. In the job market, with regard to your earning ability, your ability to earn money to pay for your lifestyle, you cannot be casual. Casualness leads to casualties. So, what is your next career going to be? And even more important, what do you absolutely positively have to be excellent at in order to maintain and increase your current level of income in your next career? You read continually in the newspapers and magazines about people making large salaries who are laid off from their jobs and who later have to take jobs paying far less. What has happened? It's obvious. They've become complacent at their work and they've allowed their earning ability to diminish, very much like the water level dropping in a leaky bucket. When they were finally put face to face with the requirements of the current workplace, no employer was willing to pay them what they were accustomed to receiving. You must never let this happen to you. You must be continually thinking about where the puck is likely to be and what specific skills and abilities you must have to perform in an excellent fashion in the world of tomorrow. The most important mental shift that you can make is from the employee mentality to the vendor mentality, from the attitude of working for a company to the attitude of being the president of your own company. You must see yourself as the president of an entrepreneurial company of one, selling your services as a vendor or consultant to your existing company in exchange for specific fees that you get for achieving specific results. This is the most important of all mental shifts that you can make for the rest of your career. The great majority of people are brought up through our educational system and our socialization processes to see themselves as passive agents in the workplace. We're taught and trained to go out, dress properly, be polite, and get someone to hire us and give us a job and a place to sit. We read books and take training courses on interviewing skills, and we then convince somebody that we are the right person to choose out of the various candidates available. Once we get our jobs, we look to the company as our source of money, benefits, medical care, social connections, and so on. Gradually, we become passive and accepting rather than proactive and demanding. If we're not careful, we will see the company as our source of income rather than seeing our productive capabilities as our source of income. We will see the company as the supplier of our paycheck rather than the conduit through which our paycheck comes from the marketplace. The most important mistake you can ever make is to think that you ever work for anyone else but yourself. You are always self-employed. The top 3% of Americans, no matter who signs their paychecks or for how long, always see themselves as self-employed. The top 3% always act and think as if they own the place they work at. They take their jobs and the success of the enterprise personally as if they personally owned 100% of the stock of their companies. Sometimes I ask people what they would do differently if they were the sole owner of the company that currently employs them. What would they change? What would they do more of or less of? How would it change their attitude to see themselves as the owners of their own companies? When you see yourself as the president of your own life, your own career, your own personal services corporation, your whole attitude towards yourself and your future changes immediately. It is one of the most powerful thinking tools that you can develop. See yourself as the president of your own company. See yourself as completely in charge of your own life. See yourself as the maker and breaker of everything that happens to you in the world of work. See yourself as a proactive agent rather than as a reactive recipient. See yourself as the head of your own personal business. When you begin to see yourself as the president of your own company, you realize, as Harry Truman said, the buck stops here. When you see yourself as the president of your own company, you accept complete responsibility for results. From that moment forward, you stop making excuses or blaming other people for things that aren't working or for things that you don't particularly like in your workplace. You take it upon yourself to make whatever changes are necessary because it's your company. When you see yourself as the president, you stop criticizing other people, especially your boss, your coworkers, or your subordinates. You refuse to engage in backbiting and gossiping within the organization. You don't play politics. All you're concerned about is performance. Your sole aim is to get the job done, and to get it done well and done quickly. You are the president of your own company. I was talking to the senior vice president of a major national sales organization not long ago. He had recently gone on a sales call with one of his top salespeople in the country. During the call, this salesman made a presentation to a big client that took almost half a day. During a coffee break, the major client came to the senior executive and took him aside. He asked him confidentially, "I'm trying to get this clear," he said. "This gentleman making the sales presentation, he owns the company, doesn't he?" The client was quite sincere. The client believed, by the way the salesman acted, that he actually owned the company and that he chose to sell for the company rather than to function in an executive capacity. The senior executive smiled and asked him why he had this idea that the salesman owned the company. The prospect said that he always talked as if he was the full owner. He continually used words like "my," "we," "our," "mine," and "our people." He treated the customer as though he was the owner of the entire company, and that's the impression the customer got. The senior vice president finally smiled and said to the customer, "Yes, in a very real sense, he does own the company." It's absolutely essential to you, wherever you work and whatever you do, that you take full responsibility for results. It's essential that you act as if you own the company and you walk, talk, and behave every minute of every day like a company owner rather than like an employee. There's no faster way to bring yourself to the attention of the important people in your work life and to move upward and onward in your career than to behave as though you were self-employed. I've spoken to thousands of managers on this subject, by the way. They all say the same thing. They all say that the people who act as if they were self-employed are the most valuable and respected people in their organizations. But they also tell me that they wish everybody in the organization had that attitude. Instilling that sense of personal responsibility is one of the most pressing thoughts or concerns of managers today. And when you begin to view yourself as self-employed and see yourself as the president of your own company, your attitude toward your work and everything you do will change almost overnight. These three attitude shifts, from lifelong employment to lifelong employability, from concern about your position to concern about your earning ability, and from seeing yourself as an employee to seeing yourself as a president will revolutionize the rest of your career. The next shift is for you to move from the idea of a fixed job to the idea of infinite flexibility with regard to your job. Recognize that whatever your job description, it will become obsolete by the time the ink dries on the paper. The outside pressures and internal requirements for each job are changing so rapidly that no job description lasts for any period of time. Whatever you were doing a month ago, your current job is a little bit different. It may very well be that a year from now, 60, 70, and even 80% of your job will be different from what it was a year ago. Instead of trying to perform your job within a rigid framework for what you were hired to do, you should be constantly looking at new and better ways to incorporate different activities and responsibilities into your job function. Remember, your job is to increase your earning ability. You increase your earning ability by expanding your range of talents and skills. And the only way that you can do that is by getting into things that you are not in today. Another important shift you need to make in your career is from that of good job performance to that of excellent job performance. Malcolm Forbes once wrote, "Good enough seldom is." You should compare yourself with the very best people in your field, with the very best job that you could possibly do. You must commit yourself then to doing excellent work in your most important job areas. Getting a reputation for excellent performance in your job is the fastest way to guarantee continued upward mobility and higher pay. Now, there are politics in every organization. Politics are neither positive nor negative, except in the way they manifest themselves. Politics revolve around the control and influence of people and resources in the achievement of certain goals. As long as there are limited resources on the one hand and people with unlimited ambitions on the other, there will always be political disputes going on over power and influence. But only the person who is really excellent at what they do can rise above politics. Mediocre people have a tendency to engage in political games all the time. But when you commit yourself to becoming absolutely excellent in your key result areas, you can rise above most of the politics in your organization. And the reason is simple. When you become absolutely excellent at doing your job, you become one of the key resources over which the mediocre people will fight for control. And the people at the top of the organization ultimately win all the political battles. When you're very good at what you do, you put yourself on the side of the people who can most help you in advancing your career. You simultaneously free yourself from the people who want to get credit for what you do or hang on your personal coattails. To perform excellently, you must make the shift from going the distance to going the extra mile. Going the extra mile means that you move from doing what is expected of you to doing far more than what is expected of you. The secret to success in business and in life has always been the same. It has always been to put in more than you take out. It has always been not just to meet expectations, but to exceed expectations dramatically. When you make a habit of going the extra mile, of continually looking for things that you can do that are way above and beyond the call of duty, you put yourself on the side of the angels. Remember, there are never any traffic jams on the extra mile. And driving on the extra mile is always voluntary. The people who frequent the extra mile don't usually tell many other people about the route that they are using to get to the top. They don't want it to get crowded, but there is nothing that can stop you from coming in a little earlier, working a little harder, and staying a little later. There's nothing that can stop you from taking additional courses and classes to upgrade your skills and abilities. There is nothing that can stop you from joining organizations and associations where you can meet people who can help you and your company to expand its sales and improve its reputation. And there's nothing that more delights and impresses the people above you than to notice that you, without any prompting or urging on their part, are going out of your way to do things to help the company to be more successful in these fast-changing times. A key shift that you must make is to move from career development by chance to career development by design. This follows naturally when you recognize that your current set of skills and talents, which form the basis for your current earning ability, are becoming rapidly obsolete and must be replaced by others as quickly as possible. And here's a key point. You must move from maintenance activities concerning your current skill level to growth activities. With hundreds, perhaps thousands and millions of other people eager and aggressive to have a good job and earn a good living, the competition for the work that you are doing is fierce. What you consider to be growth activities may simply be basic learning and maintenance activities for others. You may think that you're getting ahead when you are only stopping yourself from falling behind at a greater rate of speed. It's only when you learn and apply brand new information and skills that actually increase the value of your contribution to your work and your company that you're actually growing. Just maintaining your ability to make the same level of contribution can place your entire career in jeopardy. The vice president of a major Midwestern company told me a story not long ago. He told me of a print shop manager who had been working for the company for 20 years and who came to him and asked for an annual increase. The executive informed him that he could not give him an increase this year. The printing shop manager was astonished. He tried to explain to the executive that he always got an increase every year. The executive had to tell him that he had not increased his value during the course of the year. The print manager insisted that he had. He insisted that he had learned two new software programs and had taken an additional course on supervision. The vice president had to gently point out to him that he had only slowed down his rate of obsolescence. The vice president showed him that he could hire a brand new graduate from a local technology institute who could do as much or more than the print shop manager and who already knew how to use computer programs greatly in excess of the ones the print shop manager had recently learned. "But," the print shop manager insisted, "I've got 20 years of experience over these young people." "Yes," the executive pointed out, "but 18 years of your experience are obsolete and irrelevant. The experience you have is on equipment and with processes that are no longer used in this industry." "If you're not careful," he said, "at our next salary review a year from now, you may be capable of being replaced by a younger person at half your current cost." The print shop manager walked away shaking his head, completely baffled by what had happened to his career and to his automatic increases. And this is happening everywhere to millions of people. In career development by design rather than by chance, you lay out a plan for where you want to be over the next 5, 10, and 15 years. You make a plan for how much you want to earn and what you have to be able to do in an excellent fashion at that time to be doing that work and earning that kind of money. If you don't control the future will control you. You must shift from thinking in terms of manpower, in terms of physical effort and long hours, to mind power, to thinking in terms of focused effort on valuable, highly important tasks. Your most important asset is your mind. It's your ability to think. The job of a knowledge worker, your job, is to decide what to do. The job of a technical worker or a factory worker is to determine how to do it. But your job, more than anything else, is to think ahead and to think thoroughly about the what of your work. What are the most important things that you can do? What are the most important skills that you can develop? How can you make the most important contribution to your company? Taking time to think through your work in advance assures that you use your mental energies to your very best advantage and to the best advantage of your organization. This shift requires that you move from the idea of making a living to the idea of making a contribution. Remember, you're always paid in direct proportion to the value of your contribution to your company. If you want to increase the value of your rewards, you must increase the value of your service. Every day you must ask yourself, what can I do to increase the value of my service to my company today? Making a better contribution comes from being absolutely clear about who your customer is, who has to use what you produce, and then by focusing all your efforts on satisfying your customer in the very best way possible. Even in the world of teams and teamwork, your boss is your most important customer. You are on the payroll to help your boss achieve his objectives for the organization. It's absolutely essential that you know exactly what is most important to your boss and that you do everything possible to satisfy that need in an excellent fashion. 104 chief executive officers were surveyed not long ago and asked, what qualities would most put a person on the fast track in your organization? 84% of them agreed on the two most important qualities for rapid promotion and continued advancement. The first was the ability to set priorities. It was the ability to separate the relevant from the irrelevant. It was the ability to concentrate on those activities that would make the greatest contribution to the company in the shortest period of time. The second quality they identified was speed. This was the willingness and ability to get on with a job and get it done fast. We've called this a sense of urgency, and it's one of the most valuable qualities you can develop. A major shift that is absolutely essential to your success is that of moving from task orientation to action orientation. Make the habit of taking initiative, of taking action rapidly toward the accomplishment of your most important tasks. This intense action orientation will, as much as anything else, put you onto the fast track to success in anything you do. It will propel you onto the extra mile and assure that you continually contribute more than you're paid for. This, of course, means that you will eventually be paid more than you're getting today. Accepting responsibility shifts you from making excuses to making progress. It shifts you from fixing the blame to fixing the problem. It shifts you from continually rehashing the problem to focusing single-mindedly on the solution. The mental shift towards solution orientation makes you a positive, focused, high-energy personality. It also assures that you achieve the highest quality and quantity of results possible. Let the others sit around talking about the problems that every organization faces. you concentrate all of your energy on implementing these solutions, and the results for you will be extraordinary. Another master strategy for higher achievement in the world of work and career requires that you shift your thinking from company-directed education to self-directed education. Remember, most companies are way behind in their attitudes toward training and development. They have a tendency to look upon training and development as an expense rather than as an investment. As a result, they cut the training expense at the slightest economic downturn, and they only allow people to take training that they are convinced is absolutely indispensable for the survival of the enterprise. Sometimes, when we're offering our training services to corporations, the decision maker or executive will ask, "What if we train our people and they then leave?" To this we reply, "What if you don't train them and they stay?" This is by far the most important question. One of the reasons that the Peter Principle was so popular many years ago was that everybody could relate to it. The Peter Principle said that in every organization, people tend to rise to their level of incompetence and then stay there. On the basis of this principle, every organization will eventually be staffed by people who have risen to their levels of incompetence, to the levels where they can no longer do the job well enough to be promoted, and every organization will eventually stagnate. Now, this is often true in bureaucracies, and one of the major reasons that it is true is that people sit there waiting for their companies to come along and give them the additional training they need to advance in their careers. But again, this is not for you. From the moment you leave school, you are 100% responsible for your education for the rest of your life. It is up to you to lay down a self-guided learning program for yourself that goes on week after week, month after month, year after year, throughout your entire career. It's only in this way that you can absolutely assure that you stay ahead of the curve of change in your work and that you maintain your earning ability and your employability at a high level. Nobody else is going to do it for you. It's true that you must be able to do a variety of things reasonably well to succeed at your job, but it's also true that you must focus on becoming absolutely outstanding in at least one key skill area that is vital to the success of your enterprise. This is your pivotal skill. This is the skill on which your career turns. This is your springboard to higher productivity and greater responsibility. In fact, it's impossible for you to move ahead until you develop a reputation for being the very best in a particular area. When you start doing all of the things we've talked about here, especially accepting full responsibility for your success in your career and seeing yourself as the president of your own company, you make the critical shift from doing what you have to do to doing what you love to do. All successful people are doing work they truly enjoy. In fact, doing work that you enjoy is the key to peak performance and high rewards. People who do what they love to do always tend to do it better. They have more energy and enthusiasm for their work. They do higher quality work, and they get more of it done. They're seldom sick or absent, and they soon become recognized and respected by all the people around them as the true stars of the organization. What is it that you really love to do? What parts of your work do you enjoy more than anything else? If you could define your job yourself and only do those things that you get the greatest satisfaction out of, what would your ideal job look like? One of the great secrets of success with regard to your career is for you to determine exactly what it is that you like to do more than anything else, and then to find a way to make a good living doing it. In the old paradigm, work was something that you did as a penance to earn your daily bread and to provide for your responsibilities. In the new paradigm, however, work is something that you do because you really love and enjoy your work, and you look upon it as the way for you to expand your capabilities and fulfill your potentialities. Only people who really love and enjoy their work are really successful. And the more you love and enjoy what you're doing, the more you'll eventually be paid for it, whatever it is. Finally, the last keys to success in your career have to do with moving from dressing the way the others do to dressing the way the top people do. It's from allowing your image to evolve as the result of social influences to deliberately designing an image that contributes to your success in your field. You should read a couple of books on how to dress for success in business. You should simultaneously ignore all the material that is out there that tells you that you can wear whatever you want because we have entered into a newer, more casual age. This is simply not true. Many companies allow people to dress casually, but they don't promote them afterwards. If you want to be a successful business person, you must look the part of a successful business person. There have been thousands of studies that have been done that show that the people who take the time to dress and groom so they look like the other successful people in a particular industry are the ones who tend to get promoted by the people in positions of power. If you're in sales, you must dress the way your customers' advisors dress. If you want to give them advice, you must look like an advisor. If you want to build credibility, you must look like a credible person. You have to join the group of the believable if you want to establish relationships built on trust and credibility. The workforce of tomorrow offers you more opportunities to do more interesting work and to be paid at a higher rate doing the things that you most love to do than has ever before existed in history. But all the opportunities of tomorrow will be different from the opportunities of today. Your job is to project into the future and to decide where you want to go and what you have to do and be to get there. Then, concentrate your energy and your attention on learning what you need to learn so that you can become the person you need to become to accomplish all the goals you could possibly set for yourself. The future belongs to the competent. The future belongs to those few men and women who take the time and trouble to prepare themselves thoroughly to take advantage of it. The future belongs to the top 10% of people who have learned what they need to learn to accomplish the goals that they have set for themselves. The future belongs to those who join the learning revolution and who make a commitment to continuously upgrading their knowledge and skills in every area of their lives. There's perhaps no area of modern life where change is being experienced with greater impact than in the areas of knowledge and skill. As I've said in previous sessions, your knowledge or skill in your field is becoming obsolete at a faster rate than ever before. Today, continuous learning is the minimum requirement for success in your field or in any field. And this whole idea of lifelong continuous learning comes as a real shock to most people in our society. In the last session, I said that it used to be that our lives were divided into our learning years, our earning years, and our yearning years. People said to themselves that they neared the end of their formal schooling things like, "Thank heavens this is over. I'll never read another book as long as I live." And the tragedy is, they kept their word. I've met people 35 and 45 years old who have not opened a book since they left school. However, the paradigm has shifted. We have moved from the era of one-time learning to the era of lifelong learning. Today, you get your education, and then you get your education, and you get your education, and you get your education, and you never stop getting your education as long as you live. And even how long you live is going to be determined to a certain extent by how well and continuously you get your education. There's ample scientific evidence to prove that men and women who remain mentally active, alert, and involved throughout their lives live longer, have fewer health problems, and enjoy life more than those who switch off their minds at an early age and think from then on only about switching on the television. Between wherever you are today and wherever you want to go, there's a gap, like a river that runs between you and your goal. And the bridging materials over that river are knowledge and skill. There is very little that you cannot achieve in your work and career by developing the necessary knowledge and skills, and then by applying them continuously until you have achieved the income and status that you desire. We've made that shift from manpower to mind power. Your job is to use your intelligence to get more and better results rather than resorting to working longer and harder hours. Of course, you have to work harder to be a big success, but you must work smarter as well. You cannot replace one with the other. I've studied the phenomenon of learning, the human brain, and individual intelligence for more than 25 years. I've come to the conclusion that you and virtually every other person is a potential genius. This conclusion is borne out by years and years of research. Men and women who have never accomplished very much, when put into the right learning situation, have risen to the top and become exemplary performers. It's all a matter of knowing how to learn. You must shift from the idea of having limited intelligence and ability to your having unlimited intelligence and ability. This will require your overcoming many years of childhood experience that may have left you with the impression that you have certain talents and abilities and that these cannot be changed or increased very much as an adult. But the evidence is in. Your brain is like a muscle. If you use it properly, you can become smarter and smarter continuously all the days of your life. we've moved from the era of physical strength and speed to mental fitness and agility. And just as you become stronger and faster by exercising physically, you become more mentally agile and intelligent by exercising intellectually. Because you're a potential genius, self-development and personal improvement is your key to the future, and your key to an unlimited future if you use it properly. Many teachers are now approaching their classes at the beginning of the year with a new philosophy. It is simply this. They announce that everyone in the class has an A. Every person in the class starts off with an A, and the only way they can lose their A status over the course of the semester is by doing non-A work. The teacher then explains to the class and shows the class what A work looks like and how they go about doing A work. From then on, the teacher encourages the members of the class to grade themselves and to grade each other. If they need advice and help, the teacher guides them and shows them what they need to do to their assignments to make them look more like A's rather than B's or C's or even lower. It's an interesting psychological principle that when you give someone something and then threaten to take it away, they are far more determined to keep it than they would be to get it in the first place. It's the same with you. Every subject that you approach, you must assume that you already have an A in that subject. The only way that you can lose your A, the only way that you can lose your grade as a top performer, is by choosing to do non-A work or to turn in non-A assignments. As long as you set A as your standard, you will find yourself performing far better than you ever would otherwise. The wonderful news is that you already have an A. You have sufficient intelligence and innate abilities to get A's in everything that you put your mind to. And when you organize yourself so that you are developing your unique talents and abilities in the pursuit of your career and your goals, you will find that you have a natural flow of ability that enables you to get better and better, easier and easier. The reason I can say with complete confidence that you are a potential genius and A student is because of my extensive knowledge and study in three areas. The first of these is the study of individual learning modalities, or the ways that you prefer to learn, as opposed to the ways that you might often have been exposed to new knowledge in the past. The second is with regard to your various intelligences. According to Dr. Howard Gardner of Harvard, you have at least 7 different intelligences, of which only 2, mathematical and verbal, are ever tested in school. You could very well be a genius in one of your other areas of intelligence, and you could go right through school without anyone else ever knowing and even come out of school feeling a little bit inferior to others. The third area I've studied extensively has to do with accelerated learning. Just like you prepare a complex dish in the kitchen in a certain way, performing each act of preparation in sequence, we found that you learn best in a certain sequence of activities as well. In fact, we've discovered that you can increase your learning and memorization ability by as much as 400% fairly quickly by simply adjusting the learning process so that your brain absorbs far more of what you're exposed to in a shorter period of time. Here's an important point. Most people have negative attitudes toward the whole idea of learning. They see it as difficult, disappointing, and discouraging. They perceive it to be a form of work or drudgery, to be engaged in under duress and completed as quickly as possible. They avoid it whenever they possibly can. All the best companies in America do the best training. The second best companies do the second best training, and the third best companies usually don't do any training at all. I've worked with some of the best companies in the country, and they make it a condition of employment that each person takes a minimum of 40, 50, 60, and sometimes 100 hours and more per year of additional training to maintain and upgrade their skills. I've always been amazed when conducting training programs for these companies that the programs scheduled for November and December of each year always have 5 times as many people as the training programs on the same subject scheduled for January and February. Even in the very best of companies, the very best people put off taking the training programs as long as they possibly can in the year because of their attitudes toward learning. However, learning is actually a lot of fun. You are a learning organism. You have been learning at a fantastic rate since you were an infant. By the time you were 2 years old, you had learned to coordinate 26 different senses. By the time you were 5 or 6, you had learned to use more than 5,000 different words. By the time you were 10, you had developed an incredible range of social skills that enabled you to interact with hundreds and even thousands of different kinds of people. By the time you are 20, you will have been exposed to tens of thousands of hours of television, thousands of hours of radio, millions of words in print and interaction with hundreds and even thousands of men and women at school, at home, and in your social and work activities. If anyone were to ask you to sit down and tell them all you knew, you could probably talk for days and even weeks without repetition, explaining all of the incredible things that you have easily and automatically learned over the course of your life. You always learn better when the learning is fun and easy. In fact, the subjects that you are the very best at are subjects that you sometimes cannot even remember making an effort to learn. Dr. Viktor Frankl said that these subjects are the things that are easy to do and so easy to learn that you don't even recall when the learning took place. These are subjects that came easily to you even though they may have been difficult to others. These are the areas of learning that indicate your gifts, the special areas of talent and ability where you can make an enormous contribution and accomplish tremendous things with your life. When you shift your paradigm from learning as a duty to learning as a form of entertainment and enjoyment, the whole rest of your world will change. The process of learning has many other benefits as well. For example, learning saves time. The better you learn how to do something, the less time it takes you to do it well, and the more time you have for other things. In education, this is called the learning curve. It says that if you bunch your tasks and you do a lot of similar tasks one after another, the first task may take you 10 units of time, but the 10th task in a series may take you only 2 or 3 units of time. The amount of time it takes you to do each subsequent task drops dramatically because you learn how to do each task faster and faster and better and better. Another benefit of learning is that learning saves energy as well. It saves mental, emotional, and physical energy. When you learn how to do something better, you reduce the number of mistakes and wasted steps. You compress the amount of energy necessary to achieve a particular result. You function far more smoothly. There is less stress and strain on your system. Learning enables you to accomplish a high level of output with a lower level of cost in terms of energy and fatigue. If learning saves time and energy, by extension, it also saves life. When you become very, very good at your task through continuous learning and application, you can accomplish more in 4 or 5 or 10 years in financial terms than you might have accomplished in 15 or 20 years. For example, if a person is earning $3,000 per month by doing what they are doing, and they then learn how to become better and more skillful and thereby earn $4,000 per month, what difference have they made? The answer is really quite amazing. By increasing your earning ability and your income by 1/3, it enables you to achieve the same standard of living, savings, and position in 30 years that you might have achieved in 40 years. This will enable you to retire financially independent at the age of 50 rather than at the age of 60. By becoming 1/3 better, you add at least 10 full years to your life in terms of the results that you accomplish. Just think what you could do with 10 fully paid years all to yourself. Learning also saves stress, which is a part of energy savings. When you work at something that you have learned how to do in an excellent fashion, you find it's much easier for you. You make fewer mistakes, and therefore you suffer less worry and anxiety. When you're really good at what you do, you develop a natural fluidity, and the very act of doing it actually gives you energy and fills you with a feeling of competence and optimism. Learning earns you the respect of the most important people in your life. We always have a tendency to look up to those who we know are among the best in their field. The more you learn and the better you get, the more people will respect you and value you as a person. People will be nicer to you and open up more doors of opportunity for you. When you commit yourself to lifelong learning, you set yourself in a category apart from the average person who simply goes through the working day and then goes home to watch television. Above all, learning gives you a wonderful sense of control in your life. No matter what your problems or challenges, you recognize that you can learn what you need to learn to solve the problem or meet the challenge. Your level of fear goes down dramatically, and your level of positive emotions and confidence increases simultaneously. By becoming an excellent learner, you eventually develop the attitude that there is nothing you cannot do if you really put your mind to it. And this suggests another major shift, and it is from learning subjects to learning to learn. It's important to learn specific subjects, but it's even more important today that you develop the ability to learn any subject with greater ease and facility. Once you have become an expert at learning to learn, You can then turn your mind to various subjects, and you can double, triple, or quadruple the speed at which you absorb and retain new information and skills. Another shift in learning and knowledge is our understanding that intelligence has moved from being a matter of IQ to being a way of acting. You can only tell what is going on inside a person by looking at what they do and the results of their life. We say intelligence is a way of acting in that if you are intelligent, you will act in an intelligent way. If you are not intelligent, you will act in an unintelligent way. This is pretty simple. And what then is an intelligent way of acting? An intelligent way of acting is when you engage in a behavior that moves you toward a goal that is important to you. Every time you do something that moves you closer to achieving your objectives and improving your life, you are behaving in an intelligent fashion. You are acting intelligently. Every time a person does something that is either not helping them or, even worse, moving them away from one of their own goals, they are behaving stupidly, irrespective of how high their IQ might be or what kind of grades they got in school. Intelligence is a way of acting, not a measure of IQ. That being said, how do you increase your intelligence? We know that it's possible for the average person to increase their IQ by as many as 20 IQ points and to go from average performance to extraordinary performance in a short period of time. Just as it's possible to take a person who is not physically fit and, by a rigorous course of exercise, increase their level of fitness dramatically in a short period of time, you can do the same thing with your mind. Increasing and expanding your ability to think and act more intelligently begins with the shift from a single way of taking in information to multiple learning modalities. Each person learns one of three ways predominantly. They learn visually by seeing things both in the world around them and in their own minds. They can learn auditorially by hearing things and reflecting on their meaning. Or they can learn kinesthetically by touching things and by moving around and feeling the significance of the new information inside. Traditional education systems, which were developed in the 11th century and formalized in 1830 in Prussia, are based on the lecture model of teaching. The teacher stands in front of the room and lectures to the students. The students sit in their classes and absorb what the teacher is saying. This method of teaching has two fundamental flaws. The first is that it only appeals to the auditory learner. A visual learner, who represents about 35% of learners, and a physical learner, who represents another 30%, can only learn from this method by making real extra efforts. The second problem with this model is that it was designed to fail 70 to 80% of the class. It was set up in Prussia to separate potential officers and non-commissioned officers from common soldiers. It hasn't changed in 165 years. Our education system today accepts a 70% failure rate. The teachers in schools know that about 70% of the people who leave the school will not be capable of continuous learning or filling job vacancies in the information age. However, because it's the only method of teaching they know, their only solution is to do it even harder and to demand even more money for getting even fewer results. We know, however, that the very best teachers and learning situations involve whole-brain learning. This is where the auditory, visual, and kinesthetic senses are activated simultaneously. Virtually everything you've ever learned and learned well, you learn through becoming physically active and involved with the new information. You saw it, you discussed it, and you experimented with it. In countries where several languages are used, it's quite common for the children to grow up speaking several languages as well. And these children never go to school to learn the languages. They merely play with their friends in the street. And they become so engaged in playful activities and the need to communicate with each other that they learn without even thinking about learning. I have friends all over the world who speak three and four languages fluently, and they learned them all before they were 10 years old. And the good news is that we've discovered that if you can duplicate the experience of learning by creating a learning environment that is both fun and all-engrossing, adults can begin to learn at the same speed as those children. Where accelerated learning techniques have been introduced to corporations, they've cut the training times in half and doubled the retention levels the very first time. Many language schools using accelerated learning techniques have developed systems to teach a person functional fluency in a foreign language in 30 days. In each case, the learning is designed so that the entire brain is involved, and the whole experience is relaxing and enjoyable. students are amazed at how much they've learned and how much they remember when it's over. In addition to multiple sense learning, visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, perhaps the most important breakthrough in understanding learning is the discovery of multiple intelligences by Dr. Howard Gardner at Harvard University. Gardner has shown conclusively that you have not just verbal and mathematical intelligence, the basis of all school report cards and exams, but you also have visual-spatial intelligence, musical intelligence, physical intelligence, interpersonal intelligence, and intrapersonal intelligence. You may also have an intelligence called practical entrepreneurial intelligence or creative, abstract, intuitive intelligence. You could go all the way through school with average grades and neither yourself nor anyone else would know that you were a genius. Many men and women who find themselves in exactly the right work for them later in life blossom and become extraordinarily successful, amazing and mystifying their teachers, parents, and friends. The reason is clear. They have found the areas in which their unique intelligence or combination of intelligences fits perfectly. From that point on, you and they can make more progress in a year or two than the average person might make in 10 or 20. Your verbal linguistic intelligence has to do with your ability to speak and communicate. It's your ability to grasp an understanding of a large number of words and to articulate them clearly both orally and on paper. It is an extremely important part of success in modern life, and it's tested continuously throughout school. Your mathematical logical intelligence has to do with your ability to understand and explain logical concepts, especially mathematical and scientific concepts, and probably half of your education is designed around maximizing your skills using your logical mathematical intelligence. The Scholastic Achievement Test, the primary test for admission to universities in North America, is based on two scales, verbal and mathematical. All other intelligences are simply not taken into consideration. But there's also visual-spatial intelligence. This is your ability to visualize and see things in your mind's eye before you actually create them on paper or in reality. Painters, architects, engineers, designers, graphic artists, and everyone who works successfully with pictures and images has this intelligence developed to a high state. You could be a genius in this area, and they would never show up in your traditional educational grading system. You might also have musical intelligence. This is a tremendous sensitivity to music and an ability to compose music, to play music, to sing music, and to appreciate music. Mozart might have been a flop in a traditional school based on verbal and mathematical subjects, but in the area of music, he was one of the world's great geniuses. There is physical intelligence as well. This is the ability to use your body quickly and efficiently to play sports, type with a typewriter, learn new mechanical skills, and practice physical dexterity. For example, it's been found that a person may have high levels of intelligence in a variety of areas and therefore become a doctor, but he or she will never become a surgeon unless he or she has the physical intelligence that enables them to work at an extremely high level with their hands during the surgical process. Perhaps the highest paid and most respected intelligence in America is interpersonal intelligence. This is the ability to communicate, persuade, influence, negotiate, and otherwise get along well with a great variety of other kinds of people. All the leaders of our major organizations and institutions, plus politicians, entertainers, professional speakers, and excellent parents, all have very highly developed social intelligence. You could be a genius in the area of social intelligence, which is absolutely essential for success in sales, management, marketing, and all aspects of business, and the only place it would show up would be on your paycheck. The seventh form of intelligence is called intrapersonal. This refers to your ability to think deeply about yourself and your life, to set clear and realistic goals for yourself, and to both motivate and discipline yourself to do the things you need to do to be successful. People with high levels of intrapersonal intelligence tend to be more thoughtful and more accurate in their thinking than the average person. As you know, your ability to set and achieve goals, to determine exactly who you are and what you would be best at accomplishing, is a major and important form of intelligence that's never measured. In addition to the basic seven, entrepreneurial practical intelligence is seen in the person who is very quick on his feet in dealing with a fast-changing business world. They can view a complex situation, assess it quickly, make accurate decisions, and take action, all in one smooth motion. there are many people with limited educations who find themselves in the business of buying and selling and turn out to be extraordinarily intelligent. Often these people end up as millionaires and multimillionaires after starting off buying and selling goods on the street. Another form of intelligence is creative, abstract, intuitive intelligence. This is where you have a remarkable ability to see possibilities and solutions in situations around you. People seek you out for your advice. No matter what difficulties you confront, you can come up with a variety of alternatives and then listen to your intuition, select the right alternative, and come up with a solution. This form of intelligence is incredibly valuable, and again, it's never tested. Each person has the basic seven intelligences to a greater or lesser degree. Whatever your unique combination, you already have all of the various intelligences. But they are like muscles. You can have the most fantastic muscle fiber, but if you don't develop those muscles, they will do you very little good. Think about the areas of activities that you most enjoy and that you have been best at over the course of your life. Think about the subjects that you have learned and the ways that you have most enjoyed learning them. Then combine the two, the way you most enjoy learning with your unique strengths in regard to your intelligences, and you then have a dynamic combination that can enable you to learn faster and enjoy it more than you ever before imagined. In becoming an excellent learner, there are basically five stages. The first, of course, is to relax, prepare your mind, decide why it is you want to learn a particular subject, and then visualize yourself actually using the subject in your practical life. The more you relax, prepare, determine your purpose, and visualize, the more your mind relaxes and becomes open and excited about taking in new information. Second, structure the learning experience so that you learn the way you most enjoy. If you are verbal, you'll enjoy taking notes in a logical way. If you're visual, you'll enjoy drawing pictures with arrows and stick figures and illustrating information as you take it in. If you're kinesthetic, you might enjoy walking around or flipping a pencil in your hand as you take in the information and think about how you might use it outside the learning experience. The third stage of learning is for you to explore the subject, playing with it using your various intelligences. Express it in words to activate your verbal intelligence. Think of the financial benefits or ramifications of using it to activate your mathematical intelligence. Put the important ideas into a poem or song and hum them to yourself to activate your musical intelligence. Draw pictures and learning maps showing yourself in the center and the various ways that the information can be applied in different directions to activate your visual and spatial intelligence. To activate your interpersonal intelligence, explain or imagine explaining the material to someone else or convincing them of how important these ideas are. You can even think of other people who could benefit from this information and how you might pass it on to them. To activate your intrapersonal intelligence, think how you can apply these ideas to achieving your own personal goals. Think of organizing a personal plan to utilize these new ideas step by step to move you from wherever you are to wherever you want to go. In every case, the more you play with the information, the more of it you retain, and the more easily you use it afterwards. The fourth stage of learning is to memorize the subject. There are a variety of techniques that you can use, including writing and rewriting, repetition, verbalization, visualization, making up rhymes, and restating the information in a variety of ways. Learning how to memorize large quantities of information is a key skill that you must develop to be a full-fledged participant in the learning revolution. The final key to learning is to show you know, to demonstrate to others, either on an examination or by explaining or teaching others the new information. The fact is that you become what you teach. The more you teach ideas to others, the more you internalize and retain those ideas yourself. Again, the wonderful thing about learning is that anybody can activate their learning modalities, play with new information using their various forms of intelligences, and structure information so that they take it in a way that assures that they retain the very most of it. These are all skills that you need to learn to fully utilize your incredible mind and to function at the genius levels of which you are actually capable.